Welcome to a special edition, Sports to the Max Turns Youth in Sports. For the next hour and a half, we will roundtable it with a number of experts from the area, a number of different viewpoints on youth in sports. And once you start talking about youth in sports, you can go a lot of different directions. Dan Klinkhammer is here from MYAS in his swan song season. Henry Lake's going to join us. Larry McKenzie, the one and only Corey Koski will be on with us. Leah B. Olson sitting next to me, and you were really the one that came up with the idea for this because you've seen a lot of youth sports.
Yeah, it's become a big part of what I want to do in sports, having come through sports, played in sports, and which has had such a huge impact on my life. And now as I've watched my kids come through, and we've just changed the way that we do sports. Some of it's really great. Some of it needs some help, and I feel like people need a little help navigating the system now. And so trying to provide all kinds of different people perspectives and having that conversation about how can we give our athletes the best experience in sports.
And that is quite a question. That is a loaded question. Sitting next to you, Justin Anderson, somebody I've known for a long time. He and his wife do a wonderful job working with athletes on unlocking their potential and the mental side of sports, really, which really begins as soon as you start competing. Thanks for coming by. And we're at the Cambria Studios and spending some time with us on stage, Justin.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Okay, so let me start with another loaded question. So a kid starts to – first of all, a statement. Youth sports are good.
Very much so.
Because we're going to talk about a lot of different things and how it could be better and all that. Youth sports are really good. Kids exercise. Kids play with other kids. They learn how to compete. They learn how to play fair and all those things. We also have a problem because kids drop off after X amount of years and maybe never see their full potential because they quit before they have to and all those things. So let's start with the entry point. When your kid begins to play in organized sports, psychologically speaking, what do you need to do to prepare them so that it's a good experience the first time they play?
Well, I think a number one thing is have fun. Just enjoy it. And I think that we put a lot of pressure. We put the pro model onto a lot of our younger athletes. And, you know, the research shows that 1 in 6,000 high school athletes will make it to the NFL. I mean, it is astronomically impossible, really, to get to the pro levels. But yet, I think so many of us think that our child is going to be the one that's going to get to that pro level. But when we put the pro model onto youth sport, what we do is we push people in a way that at that stage in their development is it's not constructive. And oftentimes it leads to a lot of deficits and can make youth sport not as beneficial or constructive as the positive benefits that we know that can come from it.
So, Justin, can you talk about what would be some things that parents could do that would – what are some normal things that we can do when kids are starting out? Like, how much is too much? Or at what ages can you maybe start pushing a little bit more that seems healthy?
I think the first thing parents can do is check themselves. So it's a little bit of self-awareness on what are the parents really, why are they pushing so hard? Why do they want their child to be so great? And a lot of times, if they really trace that back, it's for their own egos. Mm-hmm. It's to show how great they are and what they've done to support the son or daughter. So I think when you step back and you start to say, how do I, and what's most important here? Well, you start to look at what are the benefits of youth sport? And it is that collaboration. It is dealing with resilience. It is pushing yourself to another level. So if they look at those sort of values and those big events, are they pushing and rewarding those things? And oftentimes we're not. We're rewarding the win and the loss, or we're getting super excited if they have a peak experience, or, you know, they hit the home run, they hit the three-pointer. That's when they see the parents light up. Well, what that does is it creates an identity of I am valued as a child when I perform well, and I'm not valued when I'm not. And that identity and that development can be a really detrimental for a child development.
And part of the problem is the cues that you don't realize you're giving off. In other words, you're riding home because your kid did well, and they don't miss it that you're beaming, right? They don't miss when you're not talking and you're down and all those things. They pick up on it, and you might not realize what you're emitting. I've always heard that the best thing to do when you get in that car ride, those famous car rides that we all have in youth sports, is not to bring up the game until they bring up the game. True?
True.
And not to talk about, I think one thing that happens a lot is that you start talking about how everybody played. And so-and-so didn't do well, and he did well, and you did great. And again, just kind of reinforcing that piece of that it's all about how well you played that game.
Yeah, and I think a lot of parents are with great intentions. I think everybody wants the best intentions. They want their kids to perform well, and they want them to perform well because they want what's best for their children. They want them to succeed. They want some good things. But when they do it, and parents think that they're being clever by saying, oh, you know, they give the sandwich where you did really great here, and then, boom, they get into the heart of it. Well, kids pick that sandwich.
They know what's coming.
They know
right?
It's coming. Yep. They know it's coming. They feel it. And as soon as you turn, boom, they shut down. But if you wait till they bring it up, or you say, hey, it was just really enjoyable to watch you perform, watch you compete today, you allow them the space to open up about what it is. And then ask them follow-up questions. How was that like for you? You know, what was the hardest part of that? What was the greatest part of that? What did that experience feel like to you? What'd you learn from it? Let them start to discover it, because that gets to the autonomy piece. And you know, I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and anytime I try to tell them what to do, they very quickly resist that. But if I say, hey, you can do this or you can do this, they love that autonomy. They want to make a choice. They want to have some control over what their destiny is going to be. That doesn't change as we get older. People want that autonomy, and so let's give it to them.
Okay, so here's another thing that I've learned about watching kids play sports. All the kids know who the best players are on their team and whatnot. And they all know who should be on what team, because they play on the playgrounds together. They play, and at a certain age, they start to get curious about why so and so, and why did I not make the team, why is that guy on that team, blah blah blah. And I had a parent ask me this when he heard the promo for the show. He said, "What do you tell them if they come to you and say, hey, so and so made a higher team than I did, and I'm better than him, and you know that, or you really believe that to be true? What's the answer for a parent?"
You know, I would explain. I would want to listen to them a little bit more. What's your been experience? I want them to start talking a little bit more. But then I think there's an opportunity to talk about the reality of the world, and that adversity is something that they're going to get over and over and over again. Whether it's a job promotion that they didn't get, or some position or application that they didn't get. So that's the beauty of sport: is it teaches us to fail. How do we fail? But how do we do it in a way that can be beneficial, and we can gain resiliency and strength from it, and keep pushing and focusing on those things that we can control to get us better, to get us the next opportunity.
But should you acknowledge, should you say, you know what, you're right, you are better than him, or are you better off saying, you know what, that's not the way the judges saw it or the coaches saw it, you know what I'm saying? You don't want to give them a crutch either.
That's right. And so I would say every situation is very different, and you don't want to say, hey, put it in and blame somebody else for why they're
right, because that becomes a pattern too.
That's right. You start to give them what could you control in that situation.
And I think sometimes you don't understand what coaches are looking for. Maybe there's a coach that's more coachable than the kid who's more talented.
Or maybe they got somebody at that position and they need some big guys or some small guys to go with, and they can't have even if all the
right.
I remember at our basketball association they said you know, one year we had 12 great point guards. Well, what good does that do us to put 12? They're the 12 best players. Well, we can't have that, so we got to spread it out.
Well, and one thing I want to go back to, Justin, too, is checking yourself, because I know I had to do that as a parent when, you know, my son's a baseball player, and that's really easy for me to watch because as far as I can tell, we're sitting there for hours and he's in center field and there's not a lot of movement, and I'm like, this is really easy not to be stressed. But when he played basketball and I knew that sport, that's where I had to check myself.
This is a great
and
point.
So, yes.
Yeah, when you know
and
the sport
know
versus
it.
When you don't know the
exactly.
sport.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I would sit there, and then so I did ask him, how do you want me to show up in this way? And he said, I don't really like hearing you even when it's positive. Okay. He did say it. So what I did was I removed myself and I started taking the book. And so I was doing the scores, and I did that because I did like to yell for him, and it was positive. But even in that, that was making him uncomfortable. And this was, I had my sporting experience. This is his experience. And so I'm not trying to take that, but it's that was challenging.
Yeah. You know? I think what you're hitting on is what's challenging for a lot. And a lot of times what we see is athletes will choose a different sport from what their parents were good at because of that exact emotional reaction that the parents give. And it's all for good reason. I mean, it's because you know it and you really want the best for them. But to your point, it can have adverse effects.
Yeah, my daughter's in gymnastics and diving. I know nothing about either one. And you know what? I've purposely tried not to learn that much about it. I know if they belly flop, it's not good. That's about it, right? But I find it much easier to watch. Because I assume the judges know what they're talking about. I don't. And they know what they're looking for. I don't. And it's easier to watch that than it is a sport that my son plays.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate.
But then plus you don't correct because you don't know what to correct, which isn't a bad thing always. Right.
Right.
Yeah. So when you get one of the things that you see is parental involvement versus non-parental involvement. We all go to games and you say those parents never come to the game, blah, blah, blah. Do you think that there is a lasting benefit or negative to parents being involved in being there versus, because you see some that thrive and you never see their parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is a really interesting debate that's going on across the country right now in terms of how much organized sport is causing children not to gain some of the tools around resiliency and not being able to sort of make some of the decisions themselves or handle the deficits or the conflict themselves. You always have some sort of parent jumping in and separating or putting each person in place. And so what does that do when down the road when the athlete is struggling a little bit and there's no parent to be there or no structure there for that? And that's why we're seeing an overwhelming amount, or at least that's one theory why we're seeing an overwhelming amount of athletes when they get to the collegiate levels or the pro levels where there is less structure, why they're really struggling with some anxiety and some depression. Because they are now facing some of these variables that they haven't had to face, or somebody's come in and fixed it for them, and now they're having to deal with it themselves. Where when you were doing it out on the playground back in the day, they had to solve it for themselves, and they learned some of those skills at a much smaller level, not on a national stage, and it was easier to fix or correct or build some of that muscle.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting is, can kids go out and play pickup basketball anymore? Do they have the skills to know, because this is not how they've come through sports, how to pick teams on themselves, you know, for themselves, how to navigate that, which in itself is a skill set. But here's the thing. We're in a different time and era, so parents are going to be there. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, I think just being at practices, being at every game, I think it impacts that kids in a way that we probably don't even know all of the variables. Mm-hmm. So my thought is, if this is the way we're doing sports, how can we do it better? Because it isn't back in the day anymore, right?
I absolutely agree. It's not changing. We're gonna continue with that. I think the key is to how do we help develop these young men and women develop emotional intelligence? And I think the emotion, study that, learn up on that, because it's really around self-awareness and then awareness of others. And what are those triggers that get me upset? What are those triggers that are hitting my insecurities? And how do I deal with that? How do I deal with conflict? First off, parents can really develop that. That's kind of checking ourselves first. How do we deal with that? What are those nonverbals that I'm doing and giving to my son or daughter that might be triggering them to pull back or pull, you know, shut down?
Justin, thank you so much for giving us some time. Have fun at the Final Four this week.
Hey, thank you guys so much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the topic too. This is awesome.
You bet. Plenty more to come. Corey Koski, Henry Lake, Dan Klinkhammer, and much more straight ahead in a special edition Sports to the Max WCCL Youth Sports Roundtable from the Cambria Gallery, presented by Dickie's Barbecue in Eagan. Welcome back live from the Cambria Studios. WCCL Radio Sports to the Max is now the U Sports Roundtable until 8 o'clock, and we've got an astute panel with us tonight. We just heard from Justin Anderson joining us on stage now. Henry Lake, Late Night with Henry. Dan Klinkhammer, MYAS, Minnesota Youth Athletic Services. Corey Koski, the only one and only from the Minnesota Twins. Crystal Flint, head girls basketball coach at Creighton Durham Hall, and certainly a basketball parent, I might add, because I've seen that son play, and I don't want to get on the court with him. He's a pretty good one now. And Leah B. Olson, as I mentioned before, in the middle of it all as we talk youth sports and all the issues. We've just got a minute or so to set the table. Quick statement from each one of you. Henry, your thoughts on youth sports in general?
I've always been a fan of watching youth sports, and I really created my name in media in the 90s after I graduated from college, coming back home and investing my time in watching high school basketball, because I really felt like it was a niche thing that people were not covering, and I wanted our kids to get some exposure on a national level. So I created a newsletter around here, around town. It became popular. Minnesota Timberwolves loved it, and I've always been invested in our young people.
Dan, you're saying goodbye to Minnesota Youth Athletic Services.
I just wrapped
after
up 28
a great run,
years.
Man, that's wonderful. Great job.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
But the board is keeping me on as an advisor for the rest of the year. But my comment would be this. It's been real. It's been fun, but it hasn't been real fun all the time.
Corey, good, bad, or indifferent, how do you feel about give me 5 seconds, and we'll get back to the other side.
I don't know. That's a tough question.
Yeah, I know.
Throw it out there. You know, it's a big question, and I don't know how to answer
it. Well, we'll delve into it after the 7 o'clock. You feel good about where youth sports are at right now, Kristen?
It has some ups and downs, but...
Okay, we'll leave it at that. We'll pick it all up on the other side. Youth Sports Roundtable on WCCO. Stay with us. Welcome back. WCCO News Talk 830, Youth Sports Roundtable. Mike Max, Leah B. Olson in the middle of it. Henry Lake, Dan Klinkhammer, Crystal Flint, Corey Koski, we welcome to the stage. Just arrived during the commercial break. Remember last year I was in San Antonio, Texas this weekend, and a guy said my name. I turned around. There was Larry McKenzie, head coach of Minneapolis North. You go to a lot of the Final Fours, don't you, Larry?
So this is my 20th in a row.
Is it really?
Yeah, year 20.
Now, some of the people outside from Texas and Auburn and Virginia were complaining to me about how cold it is. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can.
Thank you for joining us as well. I'll pick it up where we left off, and we'll just keep it going. Crystal, I'll start with you. One of the things that we get into fairly early in a kid's career is separation as to who's the stars and who's not, and then that leads to who's going to be in the AAU team and who's going to put the AAU team together and all those things. What's your best advice as kids get into sports about making sure that they don't put too much emphasis on what team they're on and whether or not they're considered part of the elite at a young age, because sometimes they can get discouraged before they know if they're good or not?
I think that, you know, youth need to get their eyes off of other people and concentrate on what they do well. I think a lot of times, you know, kids, you know, with all the rankings and things like that that come out, that they rush to, you know, highlights and who's ranked at what level, and they forget about themselves and what they do well. So I would say to concentrate on what you do and do that.
Crystal, talk a little bit about high school basketball versus AAU basketball. Do they serve two different groups? Is it the same group? It's like we're crossing over, but there seems to be a different kind of message behind both of them. Is that true, or what do you say there?
I think high school basketball is a little more team-oriented, whereas AAU is really about promoting yourself and trying to get looks and offers. And it's unfortunate, but that's, you know, how it is right now. And I think in high school, you know, things are more about the team atmosphere, because you have some kids that'll never play beyond 12th grade. So, you know, the focus is a little bit different. And I say a little bit because it's creeping in there.
Is AAU then, not guaranteed a spot at another level, but it's basically the selection of kids who are moving up to that next space?
I think so, or that's the goal of it, you know, so AAU teams can go and pick and choose from, you know, the best of the best. In high school, you know, a lot of times you get who chooses to come to your school, and sometimes that may be an elite athlete, but more times than not, it's kids that are only going to play in high school.
You know, interesting. You know, we don't have a football coach up here. We should, because football is one of the last bastions. I was talking to somebody about this, that's not affected by AAU and whatnot. You just train to be a good athlete. You can't play football year round, and that ends up being, to a lot of people, very attractive to it, because you just got to work on being an athlete. Corey, you've coached both hockey and baseball. Hockey, obviously, in this state, great pride, lots of parental involvement. There still is in baseball, but it's different. What's the differences in sports? Does it matter a lot in terms of how involved parents are as to what sport your kid picks?
Well, you're starting to see parents become more and more active in their kids' youth sport experience. And they're trying to control and they're trying to navigate, because what I've learned is, you know, I've done some studies, this on my team, to try to figure out, you know, what do the parents actually want for their youth sport experience? And the thing that came back that blew me away, because it wasn't my number one answer, but the number one thing that the parents want out of the experience is for their kid to grow in self-confidence. So
number one
thing is they want their kid to grow in self-confidence. And so that kind of made all the sense in the world to me after that. Because now, when a kid, now, like the whole youth sports dynamic, everything, there was some clarity around that. Because If your goal, your number one goal is for your kid to have self-confidence and you don't quite understand the sport experience, I think that for my kid to have the most self-confidence, he needs to play on the best team. And so when he doesn't play on the best team, well, now I think that he doesn't feel that good about himself. And so
it shouldn't be the case.
Well, it shouldn't. But so, okay, he's not on the best team. So now what happens? Now my kid's upset. Now he's upset. Now he's crying. What do I do as a parent?
I don't know.
So the parents are like, I don't know what to do. So I need to try to protect him. I need to do something. Yeah. I need to do something. So I'm going to go scream at the board. I'm going to scream at the coach. I'm going to scream at somebody because I need to do something. I don't really know what to do, but I need to do something. And so now what the kid sees is this victim mentality. Poor me. It didn't work out because I was too small, or coach doesn't like me, or this or that stuff like that. And so now it makes more sense to me is that if the parents' number one thing is for their kid to grow in self-confidence, and their perception of self-confidence, because this is what the world is telling us through Facebook, through Instagram, through all this stuff, their perception of self-confidence is being up here. Well, now all of a sudden my kid's down here. Now he's not going to have self-confidence.
Well, and what's so crazy about that from my own sporting experiences, it was the process is where I got the confidence. So becoming competent at basketball gave me confidence, but it didn't have to be at the highest level. So it wasn't about the win or the loss. It was the process of being with teammates and working hard and getting better. That's where I got confidence to use sports in other areas of my life. And so I think that is still a big part of sports. And Larry, I'd be interested to hear you comment on this, because when I always think of you, I always think of the work you do to create boys into men and away from the court. And so there's so much more in the sports piece that can help kids grow up. Can you just talk about how you weave that through in your coaching, that it's just not on the court?
Well, for me, I mean, first of all, I just understand the numbers. You know, the reality of it is, I mean, particularly, I've been blessed to coach some really, really good players, and I've never had a guy that make it to the NBA. Now, I've had some guys that have been blessed to go overseas and, you know, make a decent living, but I've never had a guy. So I don't want to be a dream killer, but I know, you know, one of the things I always remember my mentor telling me, like, Plan A is okay, but what's your backup plan? And so ultimately, and again, because of the young men that I coach, you know, I know the most important thing that I can do for them is put them in position to get a college degree and graduate. Because, you know, again, you know, I'm realistic. And even if you do make it, the average length of time is 3.5 years. So at that point, right now, they're coming out, you're drafted at 18. You're 22 years old and looking for a job, a real job. And I've heard some horrific stories about from guys that I know, some very close to me, about who did not get their degrees and ended up going from making millions of dollars to $28,000 a year. And that's quite an adjustment that you have to make.
You know, when I look at it, the assessment that Crystal had just a few minutes ago, I think is a great one in terms of looking at the AAU basketball realm versus the high school basketball realm, because the family and the culture with the high school level is drastically different than at the AAU level, because it is about looks and it is about trying to advance your kid in terms of getting a scholarship and all of that when it comes to AAU basketball. And I think that here in Minnesota, we needed that years ago, because kids didn't have the exposure that everybody else from New York and L.A. and all these other places, they were getting that exposure early on. We needed that. We didn't have that. But when you have the Kyle Elamines and the other kids that came after that, that really helped everything. But it comes back to, I guess, at the high school level, having great mentors and great coaches that are in the community doing the work. And that's what really enhances the overall experience for young people. I've known Larry McKenzie my whole life. You know, when I was a kid at Minneapolis North, he was one of my mentors in Kappa League and all these other different programs that I was a part of. So you have to have people like him invested, not only in terms of just the everyday work that you do in the community, but also coaching.
Now we're going to get real for a second, okay? Dan, you're going to start this. We talk about the wide array of sports. And the truth is, Larry, you and I have talked about this before, there are certain sports that the inner city is going to have a hell of a time trying to compete in. If you want your kid to be a great tennis player, a great gymnast, a great hockey player, it costs a lot of money. And all you got to do is look at it. And I think the gap is getting wider and wider right now when you look at who ends up in the finals in certain sports all the time. So, Dan, I want you to start with this from MYAS standpoint. Can kids that are socioeconomically challenged, is there enough opportunities out there if people seek them that they can compete? Because the other thing that I notice is it has nothing to do with athletic ability. You know, so the only difference is somebody's getting more training, more ice time, more pool time. That's the only thing, because they can buy it. Is there enough opportunities if people seek it if they're economically challenged?
I think there are opportunities out there. I see an awful lot of inner city kids, kids from rural Minnesota. They find a way, or people find them one way or another. All they've got to do is get some exposure. So, you know, one of the things that's happened here in Minnesota, I don't know if people realize this or not, but Minnesota has more youth basketball players per capita than any other state in the country.
No question, and people don't understand this.
Well, I can tell you how that happened, though, is that 30 years ago, most people were just concentrating on just the elite athletes, the very, very, very best. Our philosophy has always been, and I kind of brought this from my park and rec background, is that we're going to create a place where everybody has a level playing field, no matter how good you are or how bad you are. As long as you have the desire and you want to play that sport, we figured out a way how to make it so every child, every team has an opportunity to actually win. Our great basketball state tournament is an example of that. We take 200 teams in the 7th grade girls division. We break them into 14 or 15 divisions of 16 each. And then the coaches seed those teams, which is another nightmare, but it works. We've been doing it now since day one. I remember my first seeding meeting with only 23 teams went till 2 o'clock in the morning. But I think that there is opportunity. There are enough... I'm aware of enough really good people, like right here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, that will take those kids and put them underneath their wing and make sure that they get an opportunity to play. Our Minneapolis and St. Paul basketball coalitions is a good example of that.
All right, let's take a break. We'll pick up on that when we come back. Interesting discussion. WCCO News Talk 830 Sports, the Max Youth Sports Roundtable, and we've got an astute panel. More with them, and we'll talk about how you overcome maybe the adversity or challenges you have in your life to make sure that your kid gets the ultimate experience. That's next. Welcome back. WCCO News Talk 830 Youth Sports Roundtable going until 8 o'clock. Final Four discussion at 8 o'clock. We'll have a referee. The guy that ran it, Jeff Schemmelbeck, last time I was here, and much more. Leah, you've got an upcoming podcast, radio.com, called U Sports Intervention.
Yeah, we thought that was a catchy name. But what it's really about is bringing in all the voices of U Sports, which is former athletes, adults, referees, parents, anyone who's involved in it in any level, really. Because what I want the conversation to be is how can we better serve it? And so the intention of the podcast is to create better experiences for our athletes and having people bring their stories, what they learned, which I think will be super interesting, and then always leaving with what can we do to help parents and athletes navigate the system.
Okay, so yeah, and I can be all three in the same time, a parent, a coach, and a referee, sometimes the same game. I got to be careful of that. Okay,
exactly.
I want to pick it up where we left off, though. I was talking about socioeconomics, and the truth is that some kids aren't going to have as much money to compete, and it's necessary in some sports. Now, Larry, you take it. Corey, you've got a very interesting take on it. Crystal, you finish it up.
Well, I we talked about basketball, and I think, I mean, the reality of it is, you know, for me, and I think if you think about this, for kids that live in North Minneapolis, if you go to North High School, you have now we have a possibility of winning a state title in football, but we're not going to win a title in baseball, lacrosse, hockey, golf, any of those other kinds of things. So it is about economics, because a lot of those sports require specialized training, ice time, and other kinds of things. And so it is a gap. And one of the reasons that you tend to see particularly African-American boys and girls, you know, lean toward basketball more is because if I can get a good pair of sneakers, I mean, I can go compete. But You know, and again, I mean, you could still go to the park and work on your free throw and those kind of things, but I can't do that in some of the other sports. And so, again, I mean, we lose a lot of kids from our community because they are going places in order to have opportunities. And I guarantee you, most of those parents are middle-class parents that can afford to invest in those kids. So I think there is a real issue around economics and opportunity.
Hey, Corey, you bring up an interesting point, though, and that is, how are you defining a good experience, right?
Yeah. Everything you're saying, it makes sense. But then we break it down. How do we define the experience, and how do we define what compete looks like? There's points in this in which, you know, to me, I'm a Puritan of a game of sport, and a game is a game. And what kids want, and what kids, people, anybody who competes wants the ability to have a chance to win a game. So if you put them in level appropriate situations, you put anybody in level appropriate situations, and like, for example, in baseball, they have A, AA, AAA. And, you know, an A-level group of kids can't compete at a AAA level, but if they get to compete against other A-level, against A-level group of kids. So if you can keep the caliber somewhat similar, because at the end of the day, when the kids go and play, they don't want to go into a game and know that they're going to lose 10-1, and they also don't want to know that they're going to win 10-1. They want the ability to have a game in which they compete, where they either the game is going to be with 1 or 2 points or whatever that looks like.
I do think that it is based off of socioeconomic status. I was at Minneapolis North, and, you know, with very little resources. And I'm at Creighton-Durham Hall now that has very good resources. So I think that it doesn't guarantee a win, but that does play a factor.
There's no question in my mind it plays a factor. And on top of that, you know, there's layers that we have to talk about. Number one is awareness. Young kids in the inner city know about football. They know about basketball. They don't necessarily know everything about soccer or lacrosse and some of these other sports. So awareness is one of the issues as well. The other thing is, when it comes to, Corey talked about the experience. That's awesome. That's in a utopic sense. There are young people in our country that are looking to sports as a way out. And that's another layer that we don't talk about enough.
So, Henry, you just hit on my point. I mean, so our kids, and I do this every year. At the beginning of the season, I ask all of my kids, raise your hand if your parents have a college fund. And out of 60 kids, maybe one or two. So our kids, so my kids aren't playing for the experience. Kids are playing with the hope and the mission of trying to get a scholarship so that they can have an opportunity to go to college, because otherwise there is no other plan.
Tyler Johnson from the Golden Gophers, who's going to get drafted. He's going to play in the National Football League. He just said this week, and he's returning back to the Gophers, and he could go to NFL right now. He says that he's going to be the first person from his family to graduate from college.
So here's my piece on that, then, is that, and you mentioned this, that you have yet to have an NBA player on any of your teams, but that you have had college players. So that the intensity around sports is that piece you just mentioned right there. It's that it's not really just about playing the game. It's about trying to elevate and get to somewhere else, get to a better place. So I think that's part of this intensity with parents and people fighting at games and kind of taking it to a different level. But the piece on that I think is really important is it's not just about what happens on the court or on the field. It's still creating well-rounded young people, right? And so I know that is what you're saying, but I don't think we can leave that out of the conversation, is that we're just creating athletes who are going to try to make it out. We still have to create that well-rounded person.
So I agree with you 100%. And so along with that, when you're talking about being well-rounded, like I tell my kids all the time, first and foremost, you got to be a student athlete, right? Because you can run a 4.2 40, But in the end, the most important stat you will ever have is called GPA, SAT, and ACT. So that's our focus. That's our focus, because you're not going to get to college or have an opportunity if you don't take care of those things. So first and foremost, my number one goal is to position them in the classroom so that when the coach come knocking and the separator becomes the GPA, the ACT, and the SAT, then they're in a position now to qualify and get those opportunities.
Curry, before we go to break, you've got LinkLead, and you've been doing this for a while, podcast.
Yeah, so I have a website called LinkLead, so it's linklead.com, and basically I'm going through my podcast, and people are telling their stories. And athletes, business people, and talking how the youth sport experience affected them, and, you know, stuff, the adversity that they had to deal with. And so we take those stories, and the goal of it is to use our stories to help other people going through their stories, because, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, where you come from or kind of what you've been through. We all get angry. We all have anxiety. We all have frustration. We all have that stuff. And a lot of people have gone through similar stuff. So using our stories of people who've kind of gone through it to help other people mentor or help, you know, kids and parents kind of inspire, encourage, and mentor them as they go through this stuff.
All right. So when we come back, is that the greatest thing that sports teaches us? Is that we need to have our kids discouraged, beat up, angry sometimes? Is that the greatest tool that we have, as much as we try to shield them from that? Our panel will take on that and much more. WCCLU Sports Roundtable, that's next. Welcome back, WCCLU Sports Roundtable, Sports to the Max. Dan Klinkhammer, one of the things we hear about often every year, but more lately, is a shortage of officials. And that's every level. And you're talking to a former umpire here. I umpired for years. One of the great vocations you can have, and you meet people and you deal with situations and you have lifelong friends. It's a great thing. I don't know that we sell it well enough sometimes.
Well, I'll preface my comments about officials by telling you that a year ago when we did the grade basketball state tournaments, I'm the disciplinarian there. Everything goes through me. When we have an unsportsmanlike act, it comes to me. We had 11 different incidents that needed some disciplinary attention. Only one of those was from a player. Two of those were from coaches. The other eight were from parents in the stands. And as a result of that, I gave Leah some brochures here that we started to pass out at our grade basketball state tournaments every Saturday, and we'll do that for the rest of this year. But it's a spectator card, and it talks about a fact about officials and why we have the epidemic of not having enough of them. For example, the one Leah is holding here says 80% of high school officials quit before the third year of officiating due to coach and parent abuse. That came right from the National Federation of High Schools. So we're doing everything we can here to recruit officials, retain officials, to teach officials. That's why we created Trusted Officials, which is an online program now where people can at least go get the basics. But the bottom line here is that the parents do need to be educated on what they can do and what they shouldn't be doing. And we always preach, yell for your team, but not against the other team. And that's such a simple message, but there are a lot of people don't get it.
Well, I also think, though, that, and it never bothered me when parents used to yell at me, and sometimes it's an opportunity to correct them, too, because sometimes they don't know the rules, et cetera, as well. Leah?
Well, the one thing I would say, too, is that in volleyball, it's young kids who are officiating, and parents are actually yelling at them, too. And so I'm wondering, do we need to make a change? Like, do we have parents have to, you know, volunteer and officiate so they can get a sense of what it feels like? But it's such a bizarre thing to me to watch a grown person yelling at a 12-year-old girl who just called the ball out of bounds and thinks it wasn't. So any thoughts on ways that we can make it better?
Well, just on that point, you know, I'm still wondering. I used to officiate. I did high school and college football, basketball, volleyball, softball, and whatever. But I still wonder to myself, who in their right mind thinks that it's working to their team's favor to be ripping and ragging on the official? You know, that's the coach's job.
Part of that problem, though, is all you got to do is watch the Final Four this weekend.
Well, yeah.
You're going to see, and they're going to work the officials from the, and that's part of their deal, right? Because they want the call at the end of the game. So no wonder coaches end up like that.
Oh, I'm sure that a lot of it is that influence, you know. But I'm thinking to myself, we got fourth grade sea level
for
girls.
For sure, but I don't think they differentiate sometimes.
They can't, and that's a problem. That's part of the education we need to do is to try to teach parents what their role really is.
Okay, you ready for another good one? Question? Okay, I want everybody to answer this question in their own words. Henry, you start it. In youth sports, ultimately, if the goal is to give them self-confidence, and I believe it is for the rest of their life, do you learn more from your victories or your defeats, and why?
Ooh, do you learn more from the victories or the defeats? That's a tough one because I think you should learn from both. But I think ultimately you probably learn more about who you are as an individual and you gain strength by your defeats.
Dan?
For sure, my defeats. I had a bus ride home when from a football game when I was a freshman where I didn't play. And I made the resolve right there. I will break into the starting lineup someday.
Well, the great Pat Summitt said that exact thing, that I loved winning, but I didn't learn a lot from my players, about my players when we won games, but I learned a lot when we lost. And I just think you realize what type of person you're going to be, how you approach that game. Do you want to come back out and play? Do you go ballistic on the court? You really figure out who you are as a player, how you're going to show up the next day. So I'm definitely going with losing.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree and say it's in defeat. And, I mean, I think the most important thing is, you know, what are you going to do tomorrow? I mean, are you going to quit and go home and be done? But you got to learn how to bounce back, and that's life. So I would say defeat.
So when I played with the Twins, I had this little joke going on with Scotty Alger, our hitting coach. And when I was hitting well, I'd say, hey, you know what? I'm Mr. Going Good. I don't need you. I don't need any help. Mr. Going Good's here. But then what the funny thing is that when I wasn't hitting well, nobody wanted to talk to me. And so but my point being in that is that, you know what, the thing, when everything is going well, you don't really evaluate, you don't look internal, you don't stuff. But when stuff goes down and hits the fan, you're like, okay, what do I need to do different? So I got to go with defeats too.
My motto to my kids is we don't lose, we learn.
Simple. So my whole point is, and you just made my point, is while we sit and shield and try to give our kids the best and blah, 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 maybe the greatest thing is they go get their butt kicked sometimes, and that's the greatest thing that we provide to them by letting them play youth sports.
Yeah, but the parents are so afraid of their kid going through that.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, because they don't know how to handle defeat themselves.
That's what I'm saying. But maybe people need to look at it differently then. What a great night. You guys lost 6-3, and now you got to ponder that for a while. This is a wonderful night for you to have to think and educate yourself.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I do think it does help, though, when a team sets a standard for parents, because my son's traveling baseball team does that from the get-go. There will not be any negative yelling. You will not yell at the kids. You won't. And when we go out of state, he wants to be recognized for being that classy team and has been nationally recognized that the boys act a certain way. And so that standard was set, though, by the coaches. And so I am curious to know, is that something you guys feel, Crystal, in that if you set that standard, do you get any better behavior from parents? And
I think that it has to start with the coach. And I think that parents in the stands have to help each other. There's a lot of times, you know, people want to be quiet and not say anything, and that's ruining the culture of your team. So as a parent in the stand, if I hear another parent next to me belittling a kid or whatever, it's my duty to say something. And I don't think that happens enough because, you know, then that parent doesn't want altercation. But, you know, you have to speak up.
And I know that there's a lot of the conversation, it seems like when we talk about it locally or nationally in regards to parents and athletics and sports, it comes across as negative, but there's a lot of amazing parents out there that do an awesome job. And just as examples, you know, Larry McKenzie, I've known him for a long time. You know, his son Lawrence is a really good basketball player. Not once in all my years of working in media and doing whether it's television or radio or whatever, has he ever called me to ask me to promote his son. You know, Crystal's
son.
Yeah,
and by the way, thank you for that, Larry, because that is more of a rarity than you'll ever know, right, Henry?
You know, Crystal's son is going to be one of the most highly – he's already one of the most highly regarded point guards in our country, and he's going to be getting a scholarship from everybody. Crystal doesn't pick up the phone. She doesn't call me or tweet me or ask me about anything. Amir Coffey just announced yesterday that he's going into the NBA draft, and I've sat next to his father, Richard, several times at Gopher games. And Richard is, you don't know if Amir's having a good game or a bad game. because he just the same all the way through. So my point is that there's a lot of people, a lot of parents that are out there. They are doing a good job of that.
I agree, but I also say, because my son, as you said, he's pretty highly touted, and he's with USA Basketball right now. When USA Basketball gave me a call to invite him to the mini camp, one of the people with USA Basketball said, you know, I sat by you at the Chris Paul camp. I didn't know who this guy was. And he said, you know, I really liked how you interacted with your son. So, and I say that to say this, some parents are actually going to ruin opportunities for their kids from their actions in the stands. So I think that parents really need to do some self-reflecting on their behavior, because some opportunities may be lost on their kids due to their actions, and that's sad.
Cost your founder and something.
So to give a little insight in the draft room, in a baseball draft room as a head coach or a hockey draft room, you go through your lineup and you get to the, you know, 13, 14, 15, and it's at 15, 16, 17, where you have some, you're like, okay, which parent is going to give me the least amount of grief? So it does happen, you know, and I see that, you know, in other people, because if you're able to draft and pick the kids in a youth sport environment, you're going to pick the kids that the parent isn't going to give you the grief.
All right, now I got another question for all of you. I think my son's 12, and then last year, April of last year to this year, he played three sports, and I think he played 100 games. Not by design, just the teams that he got on and the fact that they, you know, I run into Corey at the summer tournaments, et cetera, not because he was some standout all-star, any of those things. But as I look back, I say, he'd have been a lot better served with 50 games and 50 more practices, because the practices are where you learn everything. Not in the games, if you have bad habits, just exacerbate bad things. Larry?
Well, I tell kids all the time, I mean, my kids, one of the things that I let them play when I thought it was important to play, but we spent more time in the gym working on getting better. And I don't
There's so much skill well, development.
You know, and I tell kids, I mean, if you understand, particularly on the basketball side, you know, kids talk about going out and to get exposure, and most times they go out and really get exposed. because, I mean, I understanding the way it works. So you've got five courts going on at the same time. Games are being played. Somebody said Mike's a good shooter. He missed three pointers in a row. I moved to the next court, right? I mean, you think about it. Are you going to get more shots on the shooting machine in an hour or in a basketball game in an hour? What makes more sense? But again, you know, part of the other challenge is parents think that those kids have to be out there, that their kids are going to miss something if they're not out there. And I tell people, I mean, for me, when the process has changed now, but when Lawrence was playing, I didn't allow Lawrence to play until July when the college's coaches was out. From April through, because I knew during that time, somebody was always going to need to pick up a player. And if you were good, they were going to be calling you. So we worked on, from the time that we got through with March to July, we went in the gym. And then in July, I let him play when the college coaches was out. And it worked out for us, for my son and daughter.
Cost, you're itching again to say something. You're pondering again. Yeah. You always scare me when you're pondering again.
Where I struggle with this is that, what is the end goal?
I guess that's my question. Yeah, in a broader sense, what's the end goal of new sports?
Because, you know, kids love to play games. And a lot of coaches, you know, yeah, okay, practice is where it needs to be. But a lot of the practices are not good, because all these kids in hockey, they skate around cones, they do all that stuff, and they do the drills. There's no gamifying of the game, so they just go around, they become like robots. And so, you know, it's the lot of – and where the kids want to play games, and they want to learn – and if we can teach kids to love the game, all that other stuff takes care of itself. And so how do we teach the kids to love the game and have a true love for the game and a passion for the game? Because your son, you know – me, when I played, I loved to play the game. And I go to the gym and hit a baseball or shoot pucks or do whatever I do, because I love playing the game. And we're trying to put kids in a position in which are this skating around cones. So we're robbing them of the opportunity to really love and enjoy and have a passion for the game.
Leah, before I go to break, you got something you want to say?
Well, I was just going to say, I do think we forgot that piece, that very front piece of how of falling in love with the game, because we bring it to the kids so intensely. And when you're starting, you're going to play all the time. And so let's let kids enjoy the game. Let's let, you know, athletes will simply fall off naturally. And then those that next level of athlete can start becoming those great athletes. But I think we're trying to make everybody be a great athlete, and I think that's a big mistake.
All right. So when we come back, we'll talk about what is the end goal? What should youth sports do for our kids? Are we trying to develop kids for the varsity team? Are we trying to just give them self-confidence? Are we trying to what? We'll fill in the blank. Next, Youth Sports Roundtable on WCCO. Here's a kid, our old Dutch Athlete of the Week. He's going to have some people calling, too. His name is Chet Holmgren. Larry knows him well. Minnehaha Academy sophomore, 7-footer. Key component to Minnehaha Academy's third consecutive Class 2A state basketball championship. Three games at state, scored 53 points, 37 rebounds, 21 blocks, and 8 assists. Red Hawks beat North for the championship game. I'm sorry to do this to you, Larry, but I got to read this script, man. Congratulations to Chet Holmgren for being this week's quality Dutch, Old Dutch Athlete of the Week. Don't forget Old Dutch, the party pack. Oh, gosh, I can see you. They got these sloppy Joe chips now, man. You used to have to dip them in the sloppy.
Well, they don't have ketchup chips here, though.
It's just one flavor, man.
Ketchup chips. That's a ketchup chips and allspice and all season.
You know why? Because they got this R&D, research and development. Chris, you can bring some of these home. They got party packs. They got everything. And there's a there's 25 different flavors just at the Walgreens across the street. You think Henry Lake can find something he likes when there's 25 different flavors? I think he can find about 10 before he even picks one. That's the way it is with Old Dutch. They've been doing it for 85 years. 85 years. Dave Lee and I talk about it frequently because there is nothing like an Old Dutch treat. Old Dutch Foods, yes, quality lives here. Welcome back. WCCO News Talk 830, U Sports Roundtable. It's gone quickly. 8 o'clock hour, Final Four talk. Referee extraordinaire, Eric Curry, going to be with me in the studio. Corey Koski, your old colleague over there.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. And then we'll visit with Jeff Schemmel, who used to run the tournament, and much more. Okay, so we've got about 3.5 minutes left. Everybody gets to take a run at this, but just keep your answers concise. Henry, you start it. What is the goal of youth sports?
It's different for everybody, so there is no absolute answer to that. For every individual, every family is different, so there isn't one answer to it. Somebody could be getting to the pros. Somebody could be, you know, getting out of the neighborhood, going to college. For somebody else, it could just be having fun with their friends.
Dan.
I'll just tell you what I told my kids. I had two sons. They're now 37 and 34. But when they were playing ball, I told them, I said, I want you to give 100% effort, and I don't really care how good you are, but by God, you're going to grow up to be a decent human being if I have to kill you.
I would say kids who, what we know for sure, that kids who are exposed to sports at early ages are healthier later in life. So I think overall, at the youngest ages, it's just to expose them to the sport, and as they grow through it, they can gravitate to the areas where they want to get more serious in it. But I think we have to be really careful at those younger ages just to give it to them in a really healthy way so they can go out there and see what they love.
Yeah, I agree with Henry. I mean, I think it's different for everybody depending on what your situation, as a person, as a family, those kind of things.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Henry, too, because that's the reality of it is every experience is different. And the thing that's tough about it, because now, you know, that's one of the – with youth sports, that's the issue with youth sports, because it has different identities for – has a different identity for all these different families. So to try to bring it all together can be tough.
I would just say that, you know, do what you love to do as long as you can do it. And as a parent, you know, support your child in what they do and don't try to live vicariously through them.
Most of you guys took the old cop out on that one. I thought we'd get a better answer. I want to say one last thing, though, because, like I said, I've been involved in this as a parent for a long time now, the last several years. Most parents are really good parents. Most parents really want their kid. They're in it for the right reasons. They want to, they'll give them a hug after the game, win or lose, all those things. We do tend to focus on the 10% rather than 90%. Agree?
Absolutely.
Larry, is that true as a coach?
I agree.
I mean, in terms of the complaints that come in, Crystal?
I agree with
Well, hold the mic up.
I agree.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to hear. I don't hear that often around here. Really fun tonight to be with you guys, and hopefully we can do these kinds of things later. Not that we can solve every problem, but I think that the discussion, you know, I've learned a lot over the years by listening to people talk about youth sports, like such as don't talk to your kid until they want to talk about it, and things like that that you do apply all the time, and you don't know what's six. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are parents, and they really don't know the right way to be a parent to a kid that's participating in sports. So I thank you all for coming up here and discussing a very important topic to all of us, because not only does it affect our kids, but it affects our next generation, and that should be important to all of us. Right, Cosk?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm writing the stories at Linklate. Read the stories if they don't know what
to
do with it.
Where do they
Linklate, Linklate, Linklete.com.
Leah, podcast, where?
Well, the podcast, Youth Sports Intervention, is going to probably be available in mid-May. So okay. We're just in the process of getting it together now.
All right. Dickie's Barbecue is waiting for you guys.
Well, good.
And so, Corey,
I'm hungry.
We're going to make this worth your while after all, okay? I'll be back after this talking NCAA basketball with a referee. Yeah. Eric Curry is going to join me next.